back to Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of our podcast, and I want to thank all our listeners who join us from around the world to listen to the words of wisdom from our authors. And I'm particularly honored today, joining us from Michigan is Dr. D. Eddington. He's the director of Health Management Research Center at the University of Michigan, and we're going to be talking about his new book, Zero Trends, Health as a Serious Economic Strategy. And believe me, this is as much personal as it is corporate. Good day to you, Dee. How are you doing?
Well, thanks very much, Greg. I'm doing fine.
Well, we appreciate having you on our show, and I'm going to let our listeners know just a bit about you so they can understand the background behind the man and your mission. He's the director of the University of Michigan's Health Management Research Center, also a professor in Division of Kinesiology at the University of Michigan, and a research scientist in the School of Public Health. Trained in mathematics, kinesiology, and biochemistry, Dr. Eddington received his BS and PhD degrees from Michigan State. He is also the author or co-author of over 500 articles, presentations, and several books, including The Biology of Physical Activity, Biological Awareness, Frontiers of Exercise Biology, The 1 Minute Manager Gets Fit, second edition, and The 1 Minute Manager Balances Work and Life. And that's got to be with Dr. Blanchard. Dr. Eddington's teachings and research focus on the relationship between healthy lifestyles, vitality, and the quality of life as they benefit both individuals and organizations. Well, Dee, it truly is an honor and a pleasure, and I know that you get requests to speak all over. And you mentioned that the only segment of society that benefits from healthy people are the people themselves and the organizations which pay for healthcare and lost productivity. Now, today's system, as you mentioned in the book, kind of waits for sickness and then treats it. What are the consequences that we're experiencing as a country and economically for this wait-and-see approach that we've kind of taken with relation to wellness and healthcare?
Well, thanks, Greg. I think you could ask every one of your CEO listeners and other listeners to answer that question. It's pretty obvious that everything is unsustainable in terms of healthcare costs, not only in the United States, but every place in the world, every country and every company are feeling the same issue. And if you just wait for, I ask the question, if you only wait for defects, will you ever solve a serious fundamental problem? And pretty much the answer is no. You can't just solve defects and then solve a fundamental problem. And so medicine and wellness in general are failed strategies for the world. If, in fact, you really want to bring America in this case, but any country, if you want to bring this country to a healthy and high-performing workplace or a place to live, so if you do nothing, you risk the people flow to high risk and they flow to high costs. And in the United States, we're probably the worst case. We're 17%, 18% of our national product is devoted to healthcare. And what really upsets me is that in Michigan and other states, the single biggest employer outside the public sector is healthcare. And that's a bad deal for Michigan. It's a bad deal for the United States and every country. And when your single biggest employer is taking care of sick people. So that is just unsustainable, and I think it's time to say, no, we're not going to do this anymore. And my friend Albert Einstein, and I'm looking forward to meeting him, although I'm in no hurry, said that if you do the same thing over and over and over again, you get the same unsatisfactory results. Well, Covey would say you're insane, and Einstein would say, hey, it's time to go to a new level of thinking.
So what is that? What is that new level of thinking, Dee, that we need to go to?
Yeah, well, that's good, Ray. That's exactly what I did in Zero Trends. That's what drove me to write Zero Trends in the late 2008, and published in all of 2008, late 2007, and published in 2009. Because in the book, I talk about the do-nothing strategy, and that has to be the base. What if you do nothing? So if you got a CEO out there and says, I don't believe all this, I'm going to do nothing, I say, well, go right ahead. you know what the consequences are going to be. Now, you've been living those for 30 or 40 years, 60 years. So you really need to think about the do-nothing strategy. You know that doesn't work. Then we spent 25 years doing the business case. What is the business case for, you know, taking people and helping them be all they can be, reducing risk factors if possible, and getting people engaged in their own lifestyle, and I think developing self-leaders. And all my work is follows the work of Drucker and Blanchard and others, and all the, how do you help people become all they can be? So then we said, well, we got the business case. And then I found out there was a major disconnect between the business case that we developed for 25 years and what happened in the world. Because at least in the United States, over 30 years, I don't think we have any fewer people obese than we did 30 years ago. Back to just the opposite. We don't exercise any more than we did 30 years ago. And we don't have any fewer people with diabetes than we did 30 years ago. So the strategies we use are not working. So that's why I came up with a solution in the Zero Trends. And
How do we help those people? This is a question I'm sure for my listeners is, you know, behavioral change is talked about all the time, and we talk about personal growth and mastery. We talk about human potential. We're actually talking about this factor of changing not only behaviors, but changing mindset and changing emotional attachment to what it is that we do. What has worked successfully and sustainably to assist ones? And because I know you talk about environment and the social aspect. How do we assist individuals in making that shift, Dee?
Well, that's the core of the whole issue. You mentioned a lot of good things there, and we want to explore those as we go forward here. But I do want to say one thing about behavior change. Behavior change is another failed strategy. One cannot change someone's behavior. Even if you did, say, for example, even if you did change someone's behavior, and then you put them back in the same environment, what do you think happens? They go right back. So behavior change is not the focus. It's a wasted strategy, the way we set up America, at least, and I think most countries. We haven't changed the environment. Europe is quite a ways ahead of us in this in terms of thinking about the workplace environment and the community environments and so forth. So that's why.
Well, there's kind of, there's, is, excuse me for a second, there's kind of an old saying that if you really want to get, I've heard this said many times, you know, once a woman gets pregnant, smoking cessation is that's the key, right? So in other words, there's a values attachment to her having a baby. She'll immediately change her behavior and her lifestyle as a result of a value which is greater than what she had originally adopted. So is that part of our strategy here?
That's part of the strategy, sure. You have to have, like, smoking is a good example. Smoking was working a little bit on smoking cessation, but it never worked as great. As soon as we turned smoking into an environmental issue, then we got good change, because environmental issues means we have to have smoke-free buildings and so forth. We don't have to have non-smokers necessarily, but we have to have at least smoke-free buildings so you protect other people. So we got to get the values correct, and there's no question about that.
Disappointing payoffs. Why do you believe that this is so? And then what's really next? You know, we all know about why we should do this. I think that's been drilled in. The question is the how, and the question that employers want to know is the how. What are the steps? What is the process I have to do? I know I have to change my culture. I know I have to change my thinking, but how do I make this work so that I can effectuate actuarially claims changes, I can effectuate better health, more engagement, more presenteeism, less absenteeism, all of those things that I need to do as an employer to improve my bottom line.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And I'm glad you said that. Most employers, I think, have been very disappointed. I think medicine, I think wellness have probably over-promised or under-delivered, and that's something that's clear. Now you're right. You're asking the right question. How do we go about doing this? Well, I think it all starts with the CEO's commitment. Is the CEO really interested, or are they really committed? Interested means they say, well, let's get a wellness program out, so here's somebody, you go do it. A committed CEO will say, okay, here's the values. of our company. Here's our purpose for our company, our values, our mission, and here's a vision that we want to take. And then you got to get that vetted with all the senior leaders and eventually make sure that everyone starts to understand that vision. The CEO has to fund it with resources. The CEO has to talk about it every place. What's the value of high-performing and healthy people? And if, I think it's necessary, it's imperative for companies to have that healthy and high-performing workforce if, in fact, they're going to be competitive in this world going forward, because somebody else in the world will do it if you don't do it. So I think the competitive advantage is going to be our people going forward. So they have to think about that and then make sure that that's a value and throughout the whole company.
I think you addressed something really quite well in this book, and that's that we got to change the conversation around health and productivity at organizations. And you mentioned actually five strategies, mm-hmm. and I want you to comment on those briefly, because you say the goal is to change the corporate conversation around health. And I believe in you very strongly that this is where it's got to occur. But this is where it's got to occur at every level, just not at corporations. It's got to occur in our homes. It's got to occur in our schools. Right. It's got to occur everywhere for this mm-hmm. to become a movement where people are vitalized around this. And I love mm-hmm. your term, because you don't use wellness as much as you use vitality. And I love how you address this.
No, that's absolutely right. I talk a lot in the book about the corporate culture and the environment as being the key, those first two pillars, the CEO and the operations leadership, and then we talk others. But as we've looked at Zero Trends in the book, we're starting to implement that now in seven different companies. But then they ask the question, where do people go after they leave work? And so they got the corporate culture is one, but also the community culture and the home culture is equally important, I think. Although we're testing that, because now we're looking at every zip. We've mapped every zip code in the country in terms of a deprivation index. So we know where people are and what the culture is in the workplace, and what's the culture in the zip code level. We haven't touched the home yet, but that's interesting, because our research question is, what's the most important culture? I so strongly believe that it's the culture and environments that's driving these risk factors. And I think that's the secret, is how do we change that? We just did one study in California about, we changed 13 environmental interventions. And then with that, we changed the risk factors and we changed short-term disability. We didn't even touch the behavior change things. Now, I think you still need to do those. But you touched on the right issues there. It's more than just the corporations. But the corporations have to lead it. They've led everything. And they've changed insurance companies into health plans, because the company said, we don't want insurance companies anymore. We want health plans. So you help our healthy people stay healthy as well as take care of the sick.
Yeah, and this isn't, and it's not a commercial for Kaiser, but Kaiser Permanente has probably been the forefront leader in really embracing the wellness, because of the model that they originally started with years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's really quite interesting. And again, for my listeners, I'm not saying I'm a commercial here for Kaiser, but I've gone through a recent training program that they did for their people mm-hmm. that are involved in distribution of their products, and it was really mm-hmm. quite interesting. You speak about the role of this self-leader, and that these people turning into champions. Mm-hmm. How do we deliver or develop more of these self-leaders?
Yeah. Well, that's a part of our third pillar. After you take care of the CEO, does his or her job, and then you get operations leadership, changing the culture, then you go to the people and say, how do we help these people? Now, I think you always will have to have some behavior change programs available to them. But I think the most important thing is to change their thoughts around health and change the conversation from health is absent of disease to, I need disease is the absence of health. So how do we get people to start to think and value that? And you mentioned the pregnant person, and they know that they stop smoking now. So that's good. But the higher level value is more intrinsic value, and we have to think about that. But one thing I've started to think about is, and working on this in our seven intervention companies, is this is not just about zero trends. This is also, I say there's two outcome measures now. One is zero trans, drive everything to all the costs to down to zero, or just at least the CPI, and then be a best company to work for. I think that's a really critical thing that companies have to be, as they're going to be competing for other for employees, they need to have that feeling that people want to be there. It's easy to get people to come to your company because you pay them and give them positions. But the issue is, how do you keep your good people? And you keep your good people by paying attention to them and believing in them. So to get to self-leaders, you need to have people trained in what is it like change? How do you? What's the basic concepts of change? What's the basic concepts of resilience? The basic concepts of optimism, creativity, vitality. So we're developing, as we start training people on that, 5 to 6 modules on the web that they can go in and pass, and just read some and they pass a test and they go on to the next one. Trying to teach them about these characteristics other than just weight loss and exercise. And that, I think they'll take care of themselves on that. Why don't you just turn the culture around? Then they start to understand that this is something we need to do.
Well, that's a much more sustainable approach than just approaching it from body mass index and cholesterol screening and glucose tolerance and trying to say, well, here's what we're going to measure from year to year to see if we've actually improved this so statistically we can change actuarially what our health claims costs are. Because this is actually what you're talking about now is about creating more engagement and actually caring about the people. We want the environment in which the people work to be we want it to be vitalized. We want to be engaged. We want your inclusion. We want your ideas. We want your creativity. We want all of that. And that brings me to this next question. You suggest that we must create social and physical environments to enable individuals, families, employees, and citizens to succeed. What might be some of the key factors in that, Dee, in creating that to happen? I know you've got a course going on. What other suggestions do you have for our listeners to foster that?
Well, I think the biggest thing I think that we've done wrong is we've set up behaviors that are difficult, too difficult for Americans. So I think what we have to do is start thinking, how do we create winners? Well, how do you create so everyone can win? So, for example, the pedometer, that's a practical thing that a lot of people have used. But the guideline is 10,000 steps. Well, 10,000, you cannot get any population to walk 10,000 steps every day for the next 6 months. So I would say, let's walk 500 or 1,000 steps for 6 months. And then in terms of weight, we try to get people to lose weight. Well, that hasn't worked in the next 6 months. You can't get anyone to lose weight in the next 6 months. And you get the BMI 25 especially. So I would say on that one, let's just don't gain weight. So we create winners there. And then blood pressure, and this is the last one. Blood pressure, we say we got to control your blood pressure. Well, half the people don't even know your blood pressure. So the goal would be just to know your blood pressure in 6 months. Now, that way, we've created winners. The previous way, the way we've been doing it, we create winners and failures. So we're telling people they need to improve, they're not doing things right, they're going to die from a heart attack or something like that. So we're creating winners for 6 months. Then we can say, what's the next step? How do we go to the next step? And until we create winners through the self-leadership model, we're always going to be running upstream.
That's such a great approach, because what you're saying is you're creating awareness. So
yeah, right.
So all you're really doing is, you know, we interview a lot of Rinpoches on this program and Buddhists, and it's really about awareness. And I think it's more not so much the attachment to the goal per se, or the attachment to the outcome, but just the knowing of what it is that you'd like to do. And you mentioned that people seem to be well aware of what it's like to be in the sickness zone, but less conscious of what it's like to be in the wellness zone. And what I'd like to know is, why and how do we get them to move? And I guess you've answered part of it already just by what you just said. Mm. Part of your answer was, just make them aware of their blood pressure. Just make them aware of their weight. Just make them aware of some of these things. In other words, get a baseline, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. No, I think that's what you have to do. But even that's good, because once you start measuring something, then you can start to improve it if you need to. But the important thing is the psychological issue of, hey, I'm a winner. I did what I was supposed to do. And now public health people hate that because they set the bar too low. I said, well, tell me what you've done the last 30 years. And so we got to start with winners. And that's a mental issue and an intrinsic issue that I did it right. We got whatever the reward was, maybe our team or our department got a badge or a hat or something. But you just did it. We want to stay away from dollars, by the way, on rewards if you can. I think it's that intrinsic. But creating winners, I think, is just so much a part of that third pillar that we talk about.
I think our listeners would probably really like to know, you know, not only our listeners from our CEOs and our HR people that listen to this and our CFOs and so on, but just the general public, your comment on our recently passed healthcare reform legislation and really what you think it is going to do both positively and potentially adversely and affecting not only the delivery of our health care, but the confusion that seems to be running around out there today about what's actually going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a lot of opinion about that because I think that it's going to be so much up to what gets funded. And the law's there, but how it gets funded is another issue. What I do like is that wellness was on the table for the first time ever. Now, we've never talked about wellness. In general, health care in this country is fixing defects and access. With access, a very important issue. We fix the access to some extent. But by increasing access, we caused ourselves more costs. I did like the idea on prevention and wellness activities. So that if that gets carried through, and where insurance companies have to keep people and can't, kick them out because of pre-existing conditions or something, then I think we're on the right track. But it will be painful. It's going to be super painful. And the issue is, do we have the courage to see it through? And it's easy to jump on it against it. If we don't have the courage, we're going to drop it, and we'll go back to the same old thing we had before. And I don't know if anyone was happy with that either. So it's really it's a mess that I think that it's going to depend on our courage as a nation.
I think you go back to the Albert Einstein quote, you can't shift from the level of thinking from which you created the problem. And I think that's every institution in our country today, as you know, educational institutions, our financial institutions, our government are being tested and being really, truly tested to see what we can do to make these changes. And I think it's a good thing because we are gradually adopting new ways of doing things, but it is slow. It seems very slow to people.
It is slow.
And, yeah.
Americans are not, they don't have a lot of patience.
And so go ahead.
I was going to say, they have to have patience and courage to make this thing work.
Yeah, and I love that comment because what you're basically saying is healthcare's here, we don't really know where it's going, but the reality is we've got to do something different than what we did before.
Right.
And hopefully some of good ideas will come as a result of this and will implement good programs. Now,
right.
One of the things I'm interested in, and I know it's been talked about, but, Congress has talked about standing on the concept of taxing unhealthy foods and utilizing the tax for education. What are your comments on that, and how do you feel about this taxing of unhealthy foods?
Well, I don't know. That it's going to come down to big arguments on what's healthy and what's unhealthy, and at what point do you cross over from unhealthy to healthy? That's going to take a huge amount of discussion around that. The concept, I think, is right. I think companies have been doing that in their vending machines and in their cafeteria. So they've been doing it. And I think that my opinion in the book, I said, what does this mean for the public sector and public good and government policy? I think that every company should be rewarded if, in fact, they move their product towards a healthier product. So in the soups, of course, you can reduce the sodium, and in the soft drinks, you could reduce the sugars. And there's a lot of, I think every company, every product can be approved in some way. And when they do that, there should be maybe some kind of reward. Because this is going to take much more than just individual behavior change. It's going to take a societal change. And I think having better products out there would be a major would be a major thing.
So I hear you saying instead of taxing them, kind of reward.
Reward. Yeah,
I kind of like that idea. In other words, instead of an adverse effect for you to force you to change, maybe we can get society to adopt your products more readily if you did better. And I think we're seeing that gradually. We're seeing it everywhere where companies are going, okay, there's enough pressure on us. We need to change the quality of our foods. We see it with non-genetically modified products. We see it with organics. We see it everywhere. And I'm just pleased as punch to see it all happening.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. That's and eventually you have to have a stick someplace. But carrots, I think, work best. But eventually there has to be something. If companies don't do it over a two-year period, say, then we need to hit them with a stick. But carrots, I think, are better.
I love it. I love your approach, D. I think you're right on. In other words, give someone an incentive, not a disincentive. So, one of the things that, and kind of, I got a couple of questions here, but the one is you review these 10 simple concepts, and it's really at the back part of your book. It's the kind of the final words. What kind of parting words would you give to our listening audience about vitality and wellness in the corporation, what they could adopt? Because you give 10 simple concepts. You know, don't do the do nothing program and wait for sickness strategy, because it's not sustainable. Can you just reiterate, if you were to give our listeners three top reasons why they would want to adopt a program of vitality and wellness and inclusion and, you know, looking at everything that needs to be done, what would you say?
Well, I would just talk about the business case of a healthy and high-performing people. And I think with the competition, the way it's going to be in this world, you're going to need healthy and high-performing people. So I think that's the first thing. Also, try to reward positive actions, which we were just talking about in terms of the carrots. Rewarding positive actions, I think, is important. And then for companies and communities. All the communities should be moving that way. There's several communities moving this way. How do we change their culture and the environment, and so that people are rewarded and everyone's talking in the same direction? We aligned all of our thoughts in the same, all of our messages in the same direction. And you get the physicians saying that, the dentist saying that, the drugstores, you know, selling the, rewarding the right products, and everything in the organization, everything in the community has to be pointed in the same direction.
Well, I'll tell you something. You've written a wonderful book, and kind of a way for people from a 50,000-foot view to look down and say, this is what needs to be done. As far as the how-to, you address that as well. And I love how you end this book as well, because I think it's so important. You ended it with two quotes. One is from Mahatma Gandhi. It is health that is real wealth and not pieces of gold and silver. And then you end the other page, you say from Dalai Lama, we live very close together, so our promise, so our prime purpose in this life is to help others. And if you can't help them, at least don't hurt them. And I think, Dee, I can see that in everything, who you are as a man and your work and your contribution to the world. And I just want to thank you. I really know why you ended the book with those two final words.
Thanks,
you know, it's
a passion, and I think we all have to have a passion for this. I mean, I think everybody has a passion in life, and this is certainly my passion.
Well, thank you for your contribution, and thank you so much for spending the time with us today and informing our listeners. And for my listeners, we're going to put a link to his website as well. Where can they go to get more information about you, about your studies? I know you sell some papers. I've seen those up on the website.
Yeah.
Where would they go to contact you, D, and to get more information?
Well, the best place is our website, www.hmrc.umich.edu.
Okay.
And you can order the book there as well. That's the only place you can order the book. This is a university. I don't make any money on the book. This is a university. I wrote it, but we sell it through the university.
Okay, so that you can't get this from Amazon.
No, you can't. There's some bogus copies out there. Some of them sell for $200 or more, but this is a 1995 single copy book, and discounts for more copy, more higher orders. Or if people really want to, they can email me, dwe@umich.edu.
Okay.
And welcome. I'll go any place to talk about this. And anyone that's really interested, we want to work with champion companies and champion people. We're going to move America. And every country in the world, we got to move.
Well, D, you're the guy that's going to help lead the kind of lead the troops, as I say, and I think you're the ones going to rally it around. So thanks so much again. The book for my listeners is Zero Trends: Health as a Serious Economic Strategy. We've been on with D. Eddington from Health Management Research Center at the University of Michigan.